Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, now part of the ChairShot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com. Remember, always use your head.
You look like a dude who should be pumping my fucking gas.
This isn't doing it for me. I'm not getting enjoyment out of this.
He was a before the bell rings all-star.
All right, everybody. It is Thursday night, December 26, 2024. We are smack dab in the middle of holiday season, no matter what you celebrate. I hope you're doing it safely. I hope you're having a good time. I hope you're spending quality time with your loved ones. This is the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the ChairShot Radio Network. You can find us on thechairshot.com. I am the man with the award-winning and holy beard, DJ. I'm going to go around the room and introduce this cast of characters. You guys are celebrating with us. This is the Mindless Wrestling Podcast Holiday Party. And an interesting little nugget here. We are closing out the year that is 2024 with episode 224, which means we will kick off the year that is 2025 with episode 225. I thought that was a rather cool little nugget. And that was totally on accident. That was not planned. But let me go around and introduce the rest of the cast on here. I'm going to start with the host of the Rob the Genius podcast. He is the minister of truth, the father of facts and figures, the deacon of data. He is the official shoot bearer of the Mindless Wrestling podcast. He is Ray Cash's daddy and the man with the golden shovel. Rob, how are you, bub?
Good. Good to see another new year, or the end of another year, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk about our holidays briefly before we get into the year-end stuff. But before we get into that, I want to introduce you guys to the resident high flyer of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. He hails from the Purple Haze and Cloud Nine, Bucky's tag team partner, a man destined to go through a barbershop window. Jason, sir, welcome.
My friends, Merry Christmas. Happy second day of Kwanzaa. Still second day of Kwanzaa. We're wishing you warmth and togetherness this Kwanzaa. Happy second day of Hanukkah. And happy new year as it's coming down the pike. This is going to be I'm so excited to do this episode because DJ actually just said, this is our holiday party. Pals, we're going to peek you behind the curtain. We are so unprepared. This has been a fun, like really good holiday season for all three of us. Very long, but very stressful. And I think, and very happy for me anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up. We're in for the ride of a lifetime, or at least the ride of the night.
Yeah. I have no idea what we're doing tonight. I know last week we left off talking about, we're going to do our end of year stuff. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you guys. I haven't prepared for shit. Like, I have been so busy the last 7 days since we recorded. Like, I haven't thought about anything wrestling-wise. Even my girlfriend looked at me tonight. She's like, you're recording tonight, right? She's like, what are you going to talk about? You haven't watched any wrestling. I'm like, we're just gonna wing it as we go, man. It's a holiday party.
Call it in the ring.
What are you drinking, buddy?
I am drinking. Hold on. I have to go grab it so I can properly... put it over. I am drinking a can of Original Recipe New England IPA by The Girls Brewery. It is a woman-owned brewery here in Massachusetts. They are out of... Hang on. Dang it, I can't find the state. They are in Newburyport, Massachusetts. It is all-women brewers, and it is an all-women brewery, and I love their beer. So putting them over real quick, the Girls Brewery in Newburyport.
Real quick question. I know you and your wife do a lot of these little tours and a lot of these little day outings. Is that someplace you go to, or do you just buy that from the store?
No, I actually just found out. I saw them in a local store, and I bought their the original recipe IPA a couple of times. I've enjoyed it. I've been keeping my eyes out, and now that I've actually read the can and know they were in Newburyport, I knew they were Massachusetts. So I just couldn't remember where. I'm going to go Google that and figure out if they do tours or if they have a brew pub or something like that.
Because I know we've talked about it. If and when the day comes that I make it up to Boston, we are doing the Sam Adams.
We are absolutely doing the Sam Adams.
We have to, man. That's like a must.
And honestly, at that, we're going to do Sam Adams, and then we're going to jump in a cab or jump on the T and go over to Harpoon because it's right there too.
Excellent. Sounds like a date, man. I love it.
Love it.
Rob, since you're the one that started the drink party, because Rob in the chat said, let me go pour a drink, and that's when Jason and I said, you know what? That sounds like a damn good idea. Rob, what are you drinking tonight?
Rob, before he says what he's drinking, I just thought it was very funny, because Rob was the one who started the party here. Or maybe, DJ, did you say you were pouring a drink?
No, Rob said he was going to get a drink. I was like, that actually sounds like a pretty good idea.
Rob said he was pouring a drink, and me and DJ kind of mentally looked at each other like, okay, I guess it's going to be a party. Because Rob, if you're a longtime listener to the podcast, like DJ, you know, 25-50% of the time has some sort of beverage, and I 99-100% of the time have some sort of smoke. And Rob never has anything. So Rob started the party tonight. I think that's a great sign for a totally unprepared trio of people.
Well, so I just had me a little glass of iced tea with a little Jack mixed in with it, like I usually do.
Okay, yeah, that's Rob's drink of choice. There's the iced tea with the Jack.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have seen this man drink. When he says a little Jack, just keep in mind that he is not a little person.
He is drinking a ratio size to person size to drink. Amount of alcohol, and we like that.
Exactly. Rob's a little Jack would put me a little bit on the moon.
And me, I am doing my usual Maker's Mark straight in a little crystal tumbler here. I wasn't going to drink, and then I was like, nah, you know what? That actually sounds like a good idea, because I maybe, for me, overdid it a little bit on Christmas Eve. We spent the day, actually we camped out on their property overnight, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And since I worked today, I'm like, well, I'm not going to drink on Christmas Day, because I knew we were going to be busy, and I hate going to work with a hangover. It's like the worst. And at my age, it's the worst. When I was, you know, 25 years old, I could do it, party till 4 a.m., get up and go to work at 6 and, you know, perform at the highest level. I can't do that. Well,
yeah, because back then, even if you had the worst hangover in the world, you kicked it by 9.
Yes. Now, like, it's all fucking day. And yesterday,
now you kick it by 9 24 hours later.
Yeah. No, yesterday was rough. And it wasn't even that I had a hangover. It's just like when I drink past a certain point, I don't sleep real well. And since we were camping, we were in a tent. And it was nice and cool. The weather was perfect. It was like the low 50s at night. So it was perfect camping weather for me. But just because I'd been drinking, I didn't sleep real well. So by 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon, man, I'm cooked. Like, I'm like, I could just close my eyes right now and pass out and go to sleep. And we've still got to do gifts and breakfast, because nobody got up until like noon over there. So, you know, we didn't have food until noon, gifts at 1. We finally packed up the tent and everything, got out of there about 2:30. But I was just dead. And then I was dragging ass at work today. So I'm like, so I wasn't going to drink, and then, you know, Rob twisted my arm. Rob's an enabler. So here we are at the Mindless Wrestling Podcast holiday party. We're going to have some fun. We're going to talk some wrestling as we close out the year that is 2024. Big year for not only WWE. Let's be fair here. This was a big year for wrestling in general. And, you know, we've got a lot that we could talk about. I don't think we're going to turn this into a 2 to 3 hour episode. But, you know, WWE obviously had a huge year. AEW, in spite of what the attendance police might tell you, AEW had a good year in some areas as well. Everybody landed new TV deals this year. Everybody's new TV deals start, you know, in literally, what, 10 days? Something like that.
Everybody's new TV deals are really good. Like, all relatively, everyone did fucking awesome. which is telling me that wrestling is still going to keep going, guys, which overall, as much as we might, you know, shit on some wrestlers and some TV products, let's put it that way, we are headed in the right direction.
Yeah, and then we seem to be on a good trajectory for all companies. We got to talk about TNA too, because yeah. TNA just had a big announcement that they're sliding into in Canada into the vacated slot from Raw.
Yes.
So that's a big deal for them, and as well as the partnership between TNA and NXT earlier on in the year. It's just been incredible, and you know, no matter what you like, there's been good stuff across the board. And we really kind of just wanted to talk about some of that this year, have a few drinks, cut up, have some laughs, and, you know, just have a good time with us tonight. And we hope that you, the listener, who have been with us all this time, enjoy it as much as we do.
Well, so, DJ, I actually, since you're saying that, like, everything is, you know, despite we might be critical of the company in Jacksonville sometimes, overall, they had an awesome year. And, yeah, we've been saying, just go to smaller buildings, do this, do that. Like, the attendance will come and go. Wrestling is a cyclical business. I know DJ keeps beating that drum week after week after week, and it's going to be okay. But, like, we had a really fucking good year, guys. Like, all across the board.
Like, you know, and I probably, of all of us, have been the most hypercritical of AEW. In Jason's words, they told me loudly and proudly a long time ago, they do not want my business. That being said, there are wrestlers there that I do like to watch. And people will point at the attendance numbers and say, look, you know, there's nobody there. You know, they're in a 10,000 person arena and they sold 1,500 tickets. And, you know, but when I think about that, when I look at AEW and its success versus failure, they converted Rob this year, and Rob, like me, was as critical of them as anybody was. And now Rob is a regular viewer. And, you know, they've at least got my interest with enough of the things that they're doing there for me to at least put an ear to the ground and see what they're doing. So that, well, to me, that's...
Even I'll tune in. Yeah. I tune in fairly regularly. Not Rob has gone every
week. Rob's dialed in.
Like, all of a sudden, he's just like, he's, you know, Tony Khan's best friend. But, like, I watch, but even me, like, who, again, I'm the one who start, like, since this thing has started, I've been saying, like, I want to watch both. I want to watch WWE, and I want to watch AEW. AEW has repeatedly told me, we don't want you. We only want you if you're going to watch one, because we're going to make fun of and be weirdos about the other one. So that's whatever. But even still, they put on enough compelling programming that I tune in anyway. So that's, you know, hey, man, hats off.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for me, it's real simple. If you have people on the show that I'm interested in watching, I would watch your show. And so with them... They finally started putting people on that I'm interested in watching. That's why I started watching.
Well, hang on, because sometimes they do make this error. You put on people that I'm interested in watching, and then you make them totally unwatchable, like you're doing with one Mr. Rick O'Shea right now. There are other examples in the past, but, and again, we got to let that plane, you know, that is one, let it play out, but so far, not great.
Yeah, and so... For me, you know, because when they started doing Collision, you know, when Punk was in charge, that got my interest. And then, you know, Samoa Joe won the world title, that got my interest.
Sorry, Rob, I'm interrupting you, but I just need to say my quick caveat, because this is a year-end show. Collision, when Punk was running it, was the closest we've ever been to the Saturday night wrestling show that we all remember. Yeah. That feeling that Saturday Night's Main Event gave us for like a pay-per-view, they were doing that weekly as a weekly show for those expectations on Collision.
And so, you know, then, you know, they started, they really did turn around their women's division this year. I mean, they still don't know, they still don't put enough matches on TV, but the stuff the quality of matches they were putting on, especially on the pay-per-views in their women's division, went really high this year. And, you know, and to be perfectly honest, and, you know, this may get me in trouble in some circles, but if I had to stack pay-per-view matches up against each other this year, I would actually go with theirs.
So yeah. Women's wrestling pay-per-view matches, you would put AEW over WWE?
For 2024, having watched pretty much all of them, yes, I would.
Yeah. Talk about I'm not arguing at all. I'm just clarifying. So yes, for 2024, pay-per-view matches in the women's division, AEW wins. I'm not arguing.
Right. Yes. And I think that WWE's been hindered by some of the top talent either being injured or Charlotte's been out. Becky's been gone. Alexa Bliss has been, you know, out on maternity leave. Same as Carmella's been out on maternity leave. So, you know, some of their bigger draws just haven't been there. And that's not a knock on the women that are there. They're certainly, you know, picking up the slack, but you know, you can make that argument, and AEW really has. I won't say their roster of women is as deep as WWE, but there's some compelling women on there. Willow Nightingale is a gem.
We can get into the year in review kind of right here, because, you know, guys, we are playing this fast and loose and unprepared. We don't really have awards. I think we all have, like, individual awards that we want to hand out. I have Match of the Year, Women's Wrestler of the Year, and Men's Wrestler of the Year. That's all I've got, because we're very unprepared. But I'll tell you, my Women's Wrestler of the Year was Toni Storm.
And that's I wouldn't argue that at all.
And I'm going to double down and make an award again, another award. I'll even give her Gimmick of the Year, and I'm including the gimmick she's doing right now, because, oh my God, that's one of the best things going, like, period. The fact that she's doing this Toni Storm with amnesia thing is incredible.
For the record, I called that. Out the park.
You did.
I called that on this episode.
When she first turned up in, like, Toni Storm's here, she didn't say anything. She just showed up and stared down Mariah May, and she's wearing the hat and the thing over her eye and the old rocker Toni Storm, and we're like, okay, is this a retransformation or what's going on? And then I think she did one promo and we were all like, does she have amnesia? Or is she like acting like she has amnesia? And then in the weeks after, yes, she's Toni Storm. She believes that she's the rock star Toni Storm who's just here at AEW for the first time.
Yeah, she's the rookie Toni Storm. I love it.
Gosh darn it, she's just happy to be here, and she's trying her best. And 3 months ago, she was Marilyn Monroe on crack cocaine.
Yeah. You know what's really funny about that is the people complaining that – I'm going to give Toni credit here. I'm going to give him props. I don't know whether this was his call, whether it was her call or what. Some people were complaining that they quote-unquote wasted Toni Storm's big debut on an episode of Rampage. And I'm like, you got to understand the nuance of what she's doing. She's a rookie. And rookies don't start off in the main event of your flagship show.
Right.
Right.
You know, and she's starting from the bottom in her head.
Like, I don't even think this Toni Storm knows she's been to WWE.
Right.
Like, she would show up on Rampage. She's lucky she didn't show up on, what's the YouTube show that isn't there anymore?
Right, that would have been hilarious. But I fucking figured this out, and I'm not a regular viewer of this show. The people who watch it regularly are confused by it. Like, how did this work?
Yeah, and because she went on, they had her do Ring of Honor this week. Also.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Because only, like, the really, really top guys who have friends there or rookies go there.
Yeah. And so, and like you're saying, look, I mean, you know, WWE, look, their absences had a lot to do with it. Because, like I said, no Charlotte all year. And then Becky and Oscar have been gone half the year. You know, like I said, Alexa and Carmella are not there. And you know what? Mercedes is working for the other company now. Okay.
Yeah. To their credit, Rhea, Bayley, Io,
Kyrie's saying they, and to her credit, Liv Morgan have done their best to try and lock that division down and do something with it.
No, but they haven't had a bad year.
It's no, not at all.
AEW has had a lot higher highs, and they've had a very good one. Barkley, what are you doing?
Yeah, and it's well now I guess where I will put some responsibility on WWE's shoulders is that they didn't match up the biggest names they had still there. They didn't match them up very often.
Right.
And that's always been a staple of their divisions, that the big names always fight each other, and they fight each other a lot. And that they didn't, the ones they had left, like the ones who have put on 4- and 5-star matches, the ones that they had left, they didn't put them in the ring with each other very often, yeah, if at all. And that's, and look, I mean, it just, it, you know, so, I mean, they had a lot of good matches this year, but they just didn't have, normally they, you know, you can count 5 or 6 of those 4- or 5-star kind of matches. And, you know, and they just, they didn't have them to this, you know, to the same degree this year. And I guess some, again, some of that's because of who wasn't there. And some of that's because of, you know, choices they made, to not yeah, match up certain people. And, you know, look, AEW this year, they all their big names fought each other. Okay. And just, it makes a difference. And this year, they had more, I'd say, very good to great women wrestlers in their roster this year than ever before. And yeah, they all had matches with each other, and it makes a difference.
I think another thing, and we've talked about that on this show, another thing that hurt WWE's women division this year was Bianca kind of being the, I don't want to say babysitter to Jade Cargill, but like basically her trainer. She's bringing her in, she's showing her the ropes, and that, so that removes a major player from your women's single match division.
Yes.
And so, and you felt that, you know, with her not being in there, but we got Naomi back. So Naomi has been, you know, a great re-addition to the roster. Nia Jax had a great year. So it just, it wasn't that we didn't have the talent. It's like Rob said, they weren't putting the talent in the right places, you know, and, you know, we finally got the Women's Intercontinental Championship and Women's U.S. Championship, which gave us some great individual matches, but we'll see what they do with it from there. One thing I'm looking forward to in the new year with AEW is them moving all of their content to Max. Apparently, what I'm understanding is their entire library, you know, from day one up until a certain point, will be available on Max. I'm looking forward to it. I probably will not watch from day one, but I'll probably watch as much as I can the entirety of 2024 so that I can get caught up on current events. One thing I'll be curious to see is if this is going to be a situation like the WWE Network and Peacock, where new live episodes of Dynamite and Collision don't air for 4 to 6 weeks, or if they're going to be available in a much more timely fashion.
And I keep forgetting what the stipulations are to their deal, so I couldn't tell you right now.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. You know, I do look forward to watching and catching up on some AEW, because there really is a lot of good stuff going on there. There's some very not great stuff going on there as well. We can be fair about that, but you could look at that anywhere. You know, I got into an argument with a guy on Twitter the other day. I'm like, look, I'm like, there's stuff I see daily in WWE that I'm like, all right, that ain't for me. But in general, as a whole, I enjoy WWE, and I have a feeling that I'll more or less be like that with AEW at this point.
Yeah, because what I find is, like, the things that I like a lot, and then the stuff that I don't like, I'm just like, okay, this stinks. and it's funny because they have a pay-per-view this weekend, and like the card lineup is the epitome of what they do great and what they do that's not so great.
Yeah, and that thing is right in my backyard, man. World's End.
Yeah,
it's in Orlando, and I like we talked about last episode, it fell in the worst possible time of year.
Oh yeah,
they have a premium live event less than an hour away from me, and I can't go to it.
Yeah, because they got 8 matches, and there are 6 matches that I think are going to be really good, and then there are 2 matches I can do without. And It's like one of the, it's like one of those WCW pay-per-views from like 1997 where like the six middle and lower matches are all look really interesting. And then the top two matches are kind of like, oh shit.
Yeah. It's, you know, like, Hogan versus Vader in a strap match and it shits on the building.
It's supposed to be one of those NWO main events where everybody's going to run in. And all that.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, six out of eight, not bad. But yeah, it's just, you know, I tuned in, I started watching them because they started putting people on and they, you know, they signed some people I was interested in watching. Cause look, at the beginning, I was very much, I was being, you know, a WWE loyalist, but at the same time, they had a lot of people I just didn't care to see. Like, I don't like the Young Bucks. I don't. Okay. I don't like Sammy Guevara. I don't like, you know, I used to be a Jericho-holic. I'm no fan of Chris Jericho today. Okay. And, you know, and they had a bunch of other people, and back when they first started, their women's division was bad. You know, and it, you know, so that was just, it just wasn't a lot there that I was even interested in beyond, you know, loyalty or whatever. And so they have people there that I'm more interested in seeing. So, you know, that's why I started watching them, you know. And as far as the attendance thing, look, you know, we've been around long enough when back in the early 90s when WCW was putting on some really good in-ring product and they were making no money.
Nobody was watching it. Nobody was paying to go see it.
No. And
which is a shame.
They had to cancel shows back then. So like you said, it goes in cycles. And the biggest thing is, look, they got their TV straight. That's the most important thing. If you got
they got their streaming straight. That's in 2025. That's the name of the game, baby.
Well, that's the most important thing, that you have your broadcast stuff in order, because you can ride out the ups and downs of attendance and all of that. That's the important thing.
I wanted to talk for a few minutes about ratings, because again, some people will point to AEW's cratering in the ratings on their shows this last year. And it's, again, when I sit here and say AEW's had a great year, somebody will come back to me, Dynamite's down, you know, 200,000 viewers per average, and Collision's in the mud, and they just, I don't want to use the word canceled, but currently Rampage is no more. And they'll point to the numbers, and to that I say, look, ratings as a discourse needs to die. To a certain degree, it's important because obviously you want people watching the show on TV, but even if, let's just take Dynamite, even if their average viewers are 600,000 to 700,000 a week, if they're still in the top five of programming for the night or for their network, they're doing fine. And I look at it this way with pro wrestling, and we've had this discourse on, you know, viewing habits and where, when, and why people are watching it. And I was sitting there thinking about this on the way home. Pro wrestling, because part of it, just because of viewers and their attention span and things like that, coupled with the explosion of internet access, pro wrestling is no longer appointment viewing. And you think about the Monday Night Wars. There was the internet, but it wasn't like it is now. You didn't have nearly instant access to everything. So if you wanted to know what happened on the show, you watched the show every week. And when people will point to like wrestling and, you know, attendance, or not attendance, but viewership is down. But then you look at like regular sports, basketball, football, baseball. I take my own personal preference. So let's just take a football game. The New York Giants play the Dallas Cowboys, and they play them on Sunday. And somebody says, hey, did you see the football game on Sunday? I'd say, no, I missed it. They're like, oh, it was an awesome game. And, you know, the Giants just barely beat the Cowboys with an overtime field goal or whatever the case may be. I'm not going to go back and watch that whole game just because somebody said it was good. I might catch highlights. But if I want to watch that game, I'm going to sit down and watch it in real time. Whereas with wrestling, if somebody says, hey, did you see last week's episode of Raw? I say, no, I missed it. They say, you ought to really watch it. There were some really good matches. You know, Damian Priest beat Jey Uso and did whatever else. And you can spoil the ending for me, but I'm more apt to go back and watch a full pro wrestling show, even if I know the outcome, simply because I'm not just watching it for the outcome. I'm watching it for the content. And honestly, I think it's different with live.
Some in this time sports. Period, it's become more like real sports. Like, my dad will go back and, like, not find out the results of a game and watch it the next day as he DVR'd it and whatnot. That is not the typical experience. Once you know who wins, okay, give me the highlight plays and we're out of here. Now, if you were traveling and you somehow missed the Super Bowl and it was an excellent game, like the, I'm not trying to be that guy, but the Patriots comeback over the Falcons.
Yeah.
I'll sit down and watch how the fuck that happened. But it's more like a real sport now. That weekly stuff is just not, it's not the appointment television it used to be. Perfect way to put it, DJ.
So I think, you know, there's still, I would love to know AEW's online numbers, because I know Tony Lard heavily caters to online engagement and things like that. So I think the real tale, the real story with AEW and its success versus failure is going to be told in the online numbers, which I think they still do pretty well at. We really can't look at that as like the health barometer of a wrestling company anymore. Should have stopped 5 years ago.
I'm going to say this, and then we're going to move on from ratings, and Rob will probably give some number shit or something.
I do have a quick one, okay?
Go ahead.
When Nitro was, when WCW ended, they were down to 2 million viewers from like 5 million, but you know what ended WCW when,
they didn't want to do wrestling anymore. Yes. The suits literally did not want to do wrestling anymore. That's the only reason.
Yep, because otherwise that number, even with the lower number, it was still a good number for cable. And
it was
so,
still in their like top five, wasn't it?
Yeah. So here's the thing: as long as Time Warner is game for running wrestling programming on between, you know, the TNT and TBS and Max and all that, as long as that's the case, they're going to be there.
Put it this way, Rob: unless the bottom falls out of everything, even if it doesn't. Unless Time Warner says, we want to get out of the wrestling business, AEW is fine.
They've got a home.
Exactly. That's all that matters. So the number will go up and down. Sometimes it's because of booking decisions. Sometimes it's because of who they have and who they don't have there. If you enjoy watching AEW programming, just keep watching it. Don't let these people, because
we even talk about it on this show, and it's all true. They might be in an ebb right now, but in 2 months, a flow is coming. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, they're kind of in the same place WWE was in back in 2019, where the podcast community and the YouTuber community and all those people just shit on everything because it was, you know, it was open season and you could get traffic by doing that. And so now they're in kind of that space where now if you're going to talk about them, the way to get traffic is to shit on them and to shit on everything.
And the only thing I'll say in defense of that is because that's all I've ever wanted was an even level playing field. If there's things about WWE you don't like, I get it because I see stuff on there that I don't like from time to time. But this hyperbole that AEW, simply because it wasn't WWE, was automatically better.
Right.
Was bullshit.
Yes.
And now that the new car smell has worn off and people are now having more fair discussions, I think as an analyst, I can look at AEW a little more objectively and not judge them quite as harshly as I did, because now the discussion has leveled out a little bit more. People are actually starting to look at, okay, maybe AEW wasn't the paradise or the utopia that we were told it was. They've got great stuff. And when they hit a home run, AEW hits a home run, they've got some incredible wrestlers there putting on some incredible wrestling matches. And they should be commended for that. But, you know, when WWE at the same time has incredible wrestlers having incredible wrestling matches, and people are out there still saying WWE sucks simply because it's WWE, I wasn't here for that discussion.
Yeah, because I remember back in 2019 when those people were saying everything about WWE was bad. That was the year of Kofi Mania. And I'm sorry, fuck you if you're going to call that bad, okay?
The New Day, the Usos, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, their talent was operating in ring at the highest level they ever have.
Yeah, and so you know, and so now look, this, so I'm just not here for, cause, you know, now that I actually watch AEW programming and when I see some of these people say just some, you can tell when somebody actually didn't watch something, they're just repeating shit that they heard. Okay. So now I can kind of sense that about stuff with AEW now, cause now that I actually watch some of their programming.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. It's obvious. Okay, dude, you didn't really watch it. Okay. And you know, but it's again, so they have some good things. They have some bad things. Right now, unfortunately, I'd say the bad parts are at the top of the card. Unfortunately, and that's, you know, that's
the bad parts are actually EVPs.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, so.
And like part of the original crew or whatever, if we're going to include, you know, the hanger.
Yeah.
So let's get into it. Let's get into some of our, of the year type discussion. And we'll start with Jason. So you gave us your female superstar of the year.
Toni Storm, the timeless Toni Storm.
Okay. So your criteria there, were you going strictly on entertainment value, match, combination of the two?
Match quality, entertainment value, outkicked your coverage or exceeded my expectations, which is going to be kind of the theme of my second wrestler of the year, and that's the male wrestler of the year. And it's kind of crazy, but it's also going to segue into a recap of the year that we should definitely talk about. Swerve Strickland. Okay. Male wrestler of the year. Because if in 3 years ago, 2 years, 5 years ago, well, certainly 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, whatever, if you told me Swerve Strickland would be the AEW champion and would have an absolutely compelling run as champion, and then be involved in the retirement of one Mr. Daniel Bryan. If you told me that a year before it happened, I wouldn't believe you. Never mind that it was compelling television. Like, okay, yeah, maybe I'll believe you that Tony's crazy enough to book it. But in no way, shape, or form am I going to believe that, like, Swerve and Daniel and the whole crew is going to pull this off. I'm a dumbass. And I don't know what I'm talking about. Swerve was my male wrestler of the year. And again, I do this as there's a lot of obvious, fairly obvious answers that a lot of people are going to agree on. You know, Drew McIntyre, CM Punk, I've seen their names thrown around, and a few other people. And obviously we know the wrestler of the year, every single year from 1990 to 2020 billion. Is the tribal chief Roman Reigns. But if we're just handing out these awards so that other people can feel better, Isaiah Swerve Scott, Swerve Strickland, holy shit. Like, started to exceed my expectations, and then all of a sudden was just like, yeah, no, I am one of these guys, and week to week to week, he's like, compelling television, compelling television, compelling television. So, yeah.
Rob, you were going to say?
I was going to, and he main evented their biggest show of the year.
Yeah.
In front of 50,000 people.
Yes, sir.
So for me, cause like everything, I overthink this and I've thought this through like 50 million times. I come up with like a million different scenarios. Cause as you all know, I'm a few bad days of turning into Edward Nygma, you know. So, you know.
Well, we got to keep Rob on a tight leash sometimes.
Or I said maybe a bad 6 months from turning into Edward Nygma. if I had to pick a woman wrestler of the year, because while I was looking at it, I think the best performance in all aspects is Tony. I also wanted to, there are a few other women I wanted to recognize though, cause Jordynne Grace had to basically carry the Knockouts division after January through the rest of the year. She had to have compelling matches with people that nobody thought had a chance to beat her. Up until Masha Slamovich did beat her later, they had to hold that off till the end of the year. So for about a good 10 months, she had to make it interesting with a bunch of people who had no chance of beating her. And she did that. I want to recognize her for that. I want to recognize Roxanne Perez because it wasn't quite the same deal, but she had a lot of title defenses against a lot of virtual and actual rookies. She had to defend on basically NXT premium live events against Lola Vice and Jada Parker in two separate matches, and both of them are rookies. And she had to go out there and she had to basically hold that thing together. And she did a great job in both cases. I want to recognize her and honestly for the way she turned everything around. Cause like we said before, she was, you know, great wrestler lady before this year. And, you know, the way she turned that whole, you know, the other aspects of being a performer around. And also I recognize Chelsea Green. Cause for me, she was the most entertaining woman wrestler this year for me. And because she fully committed to every aspect of that character, which is what you have. If you're going to do the funny, if you're going to do the comedy based stuff, you have to fully commit because, you know, it's pretty obvious if you don't want to be doing that shit. And so she jumped in with both feet and she fully committed and she did a wonderful job. And Piper was the perfect kind of partner or sidekick for her. And it worked really great. And there are a lot of weeks where there are some weeks where like they were the best part of SmackDown some weeks for me.
Yeah.
So I want to recognize her also. And I mean also in Bianca, because like we said, she was, you know, she was Jade's mentor basically. And they had a lot, you know, they had a lot of tag team matches where they were against teams that honestly, the audience wasn't really that into. And so not only did she have to handle the bulk of the ring work, she had to keep the match. She had to keep people into the match also.
Yeah. She had to get the crowd going and she had to like help other people get the crowd going. And sometimes that was like, hey, whack me real good. Cause you know, that'll get the crowd going.
So, yes. So she had a lot of heavy lifting to do this year. And so I want to recognize her also. So I think, you know, for me, all of them did, you know, things that were above and beyond what you normally call on them to do. And so, all those women I want to just recognize this year.
Yeah. For all the reasons that Rob mentioned, Roxanne Perez was my female wrestler of the year. But adding to that, Roxanne is someone, once in a while, I turn into a work rate nerd. Okay. Like, I love her character work. I love her more aggressive style because she's so tiny. Like, I've seen her live. She's itty bitty. You know, she's like this tiny little thing. So she really had to adopt this bulldog mentality and be more aggressive. And this heel run has been incredible, but I like watching her work in the ring. And this is, again, like I said, I turn into a work rate nerd whenever she's in the ring. And I find myself just watching how she moves in the ring, how she applies holds, how she flows from one move to the next. And it's so good. Like, she's so fun to watch from a fluidity standpoint.
Her transitions are so fucking good, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When they say prodigy, they're not joking around. Like, right. this girl's really goddamn good.
Things, but, like, going from just one thing to the other, even if it's, like, she's going from defense to offense or she's just, okay, Irish whip to this, to that, to the other thing. Like, smooth. Smooth as a baby's backside, man.
Very, very smooth. Again, my honorable mentions go to, you know, Chelsea Green for, again, all the reasons that Rob mentioned. And I do want to throw a shout out here for taking and making the most out of what you've been given. Mia Yim, Mishin. I think Mia, while she has not had as big of a year as some of the other women, I think Mishin, who is always a gem on my TV, has really taken and made the most out of every opportunity she's been given, and I like to see that. You know, 2025 is a bigger year for her. What's Sorry, up?
I was going to throw out, because I didn't do honorable mentions. I was going to throw out, and I think you'll just take this ball and run with it. Thea Hale.
Oh, God, yeah. Thea Hale's such a gem. She's like, another one who has really elevated herself.
We put her over a lot last year, and she's always been doing well and whatnot. But, like, her just arrows, all of her arrows and her graphs just continue to go upwards. So, God
And like
bless.
I talked in the past, she's one of those ones when NXT was still doing the house show loop near me. Thea Hale was at every show. And it was neat, much like Trick, much like Lash Legend, it was fun watching her grow as a performer, because she went first from just being the little cheerleader to running around with the little megaphone and, you know, and rah-rah the, you know, the Chase U, to slowly getting into the ring, to slowly working tag matches, to slowly working solo matches, and really just honing her craft. Yeah, Thea Hale absolutely gets an honorable mention there.
Well, I'll say even with the, you know, the real such as it is, wrestling drama that started to happen with the, you know, dissolution of Chase U and the downfall of Chase U. She, you know, again, it's wrestling, but she busted out some dramatic chops.
She did.
You know, she did. She was a very integral key part of that story. So, good job, kid.
So, Rob, male wrestler of the year.
Ooh, that's,
aside from Roman Reigns.
Besides from Roman Reigns.
The next honorable mention was?
So I think if we're talking about just inside the ring, I got two.
Ooh.
Okay, one is Gunther, which shouldn't surprise anybody. But the other one is somebody who I never thought I would be saying this about.
Well, good, because I said Swerve Strickland, so holy shit.
I know where Rob's going with this, and you guys are going to be a little surprised. He's on my list, too.
Will Ospreay. Okay.
No, I'm not going to be surprised. Oh. I'm not going to be mad at it. I'm not going to be, no.
He's not my wrestler of the year. I'm going to let Rob finish, but I'm going to make an argument for him that's probably going to mirror and echo what Rob's going to say.
Because,
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I have not been a fan of his before, but he came to AEW. I actually got to sit down and watch him more frequently. And, you know, we said before, there's a difference between guys who just jump around, and then there's like a handful of people who were just next level fucking better at it than everybody. He's one of those people. He doesn't just do the stuff, like he does it so much better than everybody, and even the stuff he does on the mat and like a lot of his strikes and all of that stuff. I mean, when you sit there and you actually watch it and watch him go, it is, I mean, trust me, he'll win you over too. And he won me over. Because I used to have him in the same category with the Young Bucks and those type of people. And that was just wrong. Okay.
I want to say something about it. So I want to piggyback off something you just said.
Wrong about that.
He was in that category, though. He got him. He made himself way better at just not the moves. He's always been one of the best in the world at the moves, but he's started to just put them together in the right order since he's been in AEW. Like he is the most. He gets to that. Because all three of us hate the kick-out palooza thing. Like,
I
where
can't
you
stand
hit
it.
Every single finisher in every single super finisher and both guys kick out of both moves every single time, and it's just something ridiculous. Or it's a tag match and we all hit the team finishers and no one gets pinned by anything. Like, that gets annoying.
Yeah.
I'll say, depending on his dance partner, he did, you know, they, he, got close to the sun with that kind of stuff. But again, I'm watching him almost every single week now, whereas when he was not in AEW, I was watching him every other month, if that. So it's a little different, because my exposure is different. But
yeah.
It's not Kick Out Palooza anymore. And if it is Kick Out Palooza, they earn it.
Yeah.
Like the best way I can put it. And he has always moved in that video game Mortal Kombat style where it's just outside the realm of believability that would work in a real fight, but it kind of does, sort of, if you just squint and turn your head sideways. And that's where wrestling is magic. And he has not hit any of these points for me in any of the times that I've watched him in all of the years previous. But in this AEW run, man, he's been awesome.
One thing I want to say, I want to piggyback real quick, Rob. I want to piggyback off what you said about his strengths. One thing about when I've been critical of Will Ospreay online, one thing, and this even not just AEW, you look at his New Japan stuff, his strikes and the way he hits certain moves, he puts his whole body into it. Like you watch him do that back elbow. He's not just hitting you with an elbow. He's hitting you with his entire body. It's just the elbow that catches you. And that's smart because he's not a super, super big guy. Like he's not a super heavyweight. I don't even think he's considered a heavyweight. But if he goes for a clothesline or a shining wizard or a back elbow or something like that, he's putting his entire body into it. And there's a body language to it that is really good. You know, the Kick Out Palooza stuff, the oh my God, he got hit with the, you know, whatever, and his adrenaline was running. Fuck out of here with that shit. But individual moves that he performs are fucking awesome. You know, and he puts everything into it, and its aspects of what he does are very believable.
I'm a big, and also his Assassin's Creed gimmick, like, it just tickles me because I'm a big Assassin's Creed fan. And yeah, that back elbow is called the Hidden Blade. For the Assassin's Creed reference.
I also think he's been very, very crucial in what has made AEW good this year. Because his segments always draw. So, you know, his matches have been good to fucking great. Yes. Minus the shit that I don't care for. So he was an excellent pickup for AEW, and I totally, that's why he's at least on my honorable mention.
But even then, like with the shit you don't care for, like it's the shit we all don't care for. Like I feel like of the Will Ospreay like resume, he has reined that stuff in. Maybe it's been all his dance partners. I doubt it. I mean, because you know it's AEW. But he really has, like, maybe he thought he was going to go to WWE, and he, like, was like, oh, how am I going to work in WWE? I don't know.
He also, before he went to AEW, he was talking a lot about his injuries. And he's had a pile up of injuries, and he's like, he even said openly, he's like, I'm going to have to shift some things up a little bit. He's like, I'm, what was he, 27 at the time?
Well, because also,
and he's, he's a broken mess, and he's like, I can't keep doing this.
He also probably looks across the hall at, you know, one Kenneth Omega and says, maybe
I don't want to be that guy.
Maybe I want to dial it back. Like, cause, you know, Ken is clearly feeling the effects of his hard hitting, crazy career.
Yeah.
And just look, even when Ospreay does the shit I don't like, he does it so well. I mean,
dude. Like, cause cause Roman Reigns is always going to be the king of the kick out at 2.99999999999. But again, they do the kick out Palooza, if he gets hit with the super hidden, whatever they, you know, if he gets hit with Okada's, you know, clothesline, he will kick out at 2.999999. And so he even does the stuff that bothers us about as well as you could.
Yeah. Male wrestler of the year for me. Like you said, I could say all the things about Will Ospreay, but I also look for growth. And for me, the most compelling person that I've watched has been Obafemi. And I say that because we're, again, we're literally watching the birth of the next big thing. And I don't want to exclude Trick Williams in that because Trick has been awesome. But I'm almost reaching a point where, as much as I love Trick, and this is not a knock on him, I'm almost more compelled by Oba. And maybe it's just because I'm a fan of Haas fights. And he is the Haas of Haases right now. But just, again, another guy watching his growth, watching his evolution into a big deal. And I think it's very cool. And I hate to bring this guy up because of the negative connotation behind his name. But remember when we watched Velveteen Dream and Velveteen Dream evolved into this thing that was undeniable?
It was a rocket ship.
He was a rocket ship. And we were all like, holy shit, we're watching the birth of the next big thing. And then, of course, he shit the bed and everything like that. I feel like I'm getting the same feeling watching Oba Femi that I got when I was watching the early days of Velveteen Dream. I'm like, this guy's going to be a big fucking deal in this company.
Yeah, I think we're
and,
also
and it's so
way,
cool to be at the ground level of that.
We need to put down another, like, mindless wrestling fiat. Like, when we talk about Hulk Hogan, we are talking about Hulk Hogan. Terry Bollea is a piece
of shit. The career. Not Patrick Clark.
No, we're literally talking about the guy on the television that we watch.
Right.
Like, the character.
Right.
When we talk about Velveteen Dream, we are talking about the guy we watched on television, the character. Patrick Clark is a giant piece of shit.
Yeah, fuck you, Patrick Clark.
Thank you.
But Velveteen Dream, watching that in real time was fucking awesome. It really was. I get the same giddy feeling watching Oba Femi. And like I said, to a lesser degree, slightly lesser, Trick Williams. But for me right now, it's Oba Femi. Like, I could watch that guy any day of the week.
Well, I think, to be fair, it's awesome to see three black guys get that kind of thing in WWE, I might add.
Yeah.
Like, that is a big deal. So, but yeah, and all three, hats off to all three guys. And I think, Deej, I think what's, cause Trick and Oba are just right the neck and neck, really. But it's, you and I both love Haases.
And I love Haas fights, man.
Oba's newer.
Like, you can ask me in a month and it'll be Trick Williams. It's like literally that neck and neck with the two of them.
Yeah,
because again, Trick was the one who did the regular house shows around me in NXT, and I got to watch Trick literally from just Carmelo's hype man, who didn't get any action in the ring, to NXT champion.
And
like, I got to
always
watch that 2 feet away from me in a ring.
You said this shouldn't get lost, and I don't want to speak for you, but you said like he's always been the same guy, like interacting with the fans and whatnot.
Yes. Yes.
From Carmelo, from the champion's hype man, right, and the soon-to-be champion's hype man, to the NXT goddamn champion, he's the same dude.
Yep. Yeah. So Jason, what other categories did we have? What were we doing? Feud of the Year?
As much as I hated the ending, the show of the year was obviously WrestleMania 40.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, which
Rob
is special because you guys were both there live.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's why it was part of the reason was it was special because I was there with my wife. We got engaged at WrestleMania 30, New Orleans 34. And then I was there at WrestleMania 40 with my wife and Rob. So that was amazing. And it was a whole new level. We, you know, watched night one at a bar and we went to night two and it was, so, and I got, you know, sometimes a banana is just a banana, as Rob likes to say. And I always tell folks, you know, sometimes it's okay to just have the comic book ending and whatnot. Where the bad guy, the good guy wins, the bad guy goes down, the good guy kisses the girl, and, you know, we all go home happy.
Yeah.
They spent 2 years getting to that at WrestleMania 40. And as much as I, as like Jason the Booker, would enjoy a doubling down on both feelings, where you double down on Roman actually wins at WrestleMania 40, okay? And you double down of, holy shit, I can't believe it. They're going to go for Hogan's record. They're going to go for, you know, Bruno's record. They're, holy shit, what's happening? And then the next night on Monday Night Raw, it's just, nope, fuck you, lumberjack match. The Bloodline gets the shit kicked out of them at the beginning of the show by the entire locker room, and we paint this thing by the numbers, Cody, you know, on everyone's shoulders, and we do the confetti. Like, I wanted a doubling down on both ends. But, again, you can't, with how that show played out, you can't do much better. Because in the end, as I like to point out, Cody didn't beat Roman. Cody just, Cody's team helped beat Roman, and Roman's ego beat Roman.
Well, Roman did himself in.
Yeah. Exactly. So it was still kind of cool. I still like to point out that little asterisk of like, yeah, I don't know, man. Which again is why I feel like my idea of losing 40 and winning in the lumberjack match where you, no Undertaker, no Rock, no Solo, no Usos, no Kevin Owens, no Sami Zayn, me, you, I beat you straight up. So that's why, again, the doubling down on both ends of the disappointment and the victory. But again, between the Drew winning the title and then getting cashed in on, and like so many great stories ended so perfectly at that show, and then you cap it off with the best comic book ending that you could ever figure out. So, I mean, it's almost unfair because it was years and years in the making, but WrestleMania 40 was the show of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't dispute that for all the reasons.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, there's nothing else to
pick. Yeah. And for me, that match was probably match of the year. With a close, and I know Rob disagrees. I know Rob's probably got an AEW because Rob's seen some good stuff in AEW. Me, just for overall storytelling, that was match of the year for me.
Well, match for me, I would go with the Cell match, honestly.
Yeah.
So for me, I was going to say the Cell because honestly, the finisher spam at the end, man, again, I'm the Mortal Kombat guy. I'm watching WMAC Masters. I'm watching Mortal Kombat. I'm watching Dragon Ball Z. That's how Dragon Ball Z an episode would end.
Yeah.
Like everybody hits their finisher and we go home. So,
That was feud of the year. Like,
that was fucking incredible.
Yeah. That was feud of the year for me. Punk and Drew.
Yeah.
Because Punk turned back time. Like, he really did turn the clock back 10 years, especially in that match. Suddenly, you know, I'm watching the CM Punk that I originally enjoyed, you know, 12 to 14 years ago. And, you know, Drew, we've had a lot of discussions in the last 12 months about Drew McIntyre. Jason's entire perspective on Drew McIntyre has done a 180, which has been incredible. If you've listened to the show for the last 24 months,
Jason went from, but if you said, again, I led the show off, the segment off with, you know, some people are saying CM Punk, which, you know, I reevaluate your choices. Some people are saying Drew McIntyre, which I will not argue. My personal was Swerve, but Drew, man, that dude has just continued to just fire on all cylinders, even in losing.
And to make the best use of his TV time blended with what he's doing on social media. And that's the nuance, because a lot of folks don't translate over what they're doing on TV with what they're doing on social media. It's either pretty good on TV and absolute shit show on social media, or they're really good on social media and they can't translate it to TV. And Drew has been that perfect blend of keeping it alive on social media.
some dudes just go complete like asshole on social media when they turn heel. And it's just like, no, you need to act. Like the act continues. You don't just become, you know, like Joe Anoa'i, on Twitter. You're Roman Reigns on Twitter still. And that's right. What Drew's.
Yes. That's, yeah, the Drew McIntyre that you see on Twitter is the TV character that I see on TV.
I mean, you know, certain Irish, wrestlers like Mr. Rick O'Shea might take our lessons to heart. But, hey, that's a whole nother thing.
We don't even know to need to go down that road.
No, let's not.
Yeah, it's not.
What's the famous line? You are who we thought you were.
Yeah. If,
all I'll say is that everybody get your shots in now, but after like this weekend, just ignore the guy.
Yeah, it's over. Oh yeah, that's sort of it. It's like, okay, it's exactly what I said. It's okay. You've confirmed exactly what I thought. Just, thank you. Goodbye.
I'm just going to say that, if we continue to engage, that's a choice. Okay. Just after a while, how the person talks on social media or whatever, and it's your choice to ignore it or to keep engaging. So just, we know what it is.
Yeah.
Just listen.
And I also on a, just so there's no subtext, innuendo or whatever, I wish Samantha Irving the best and greatest things to happen to her in her career in everything she chooses to do.
I hope she's having a lovely day, and I mean that genuinely.
I do, and I mean this genuinely. I cannot wait for the announcement of what she is doing next, and I am going to be very excited.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know what else we can really cover as far as like the year end stuff, guys.
We all agree that show of the year, I guess?
WrestleMania 40 WrestleMania 40 was the show of the year for me.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah, you can't. You can't pick anything else.
I think some honorable mentions just for career turnarounds.
Honorable mention, Bad Blood.
You know, we talk a lot about people making the best of being released from WWE, and there's a couple of mentions we need to throw out there. One being Mustafa Ali, which we've talked about. The other one being Nick Nemeth, formerly known as Dolph Ziggler. It's, when you get released from WWE, there's always a bit of uncertainty. It's like, am I going to succeed in other companies? And we've seen people succeed. We have seen people go to other companies and fall flat on their faces. It happens. Unfortunately, it happens. And sometimes it's a real ice cold shower to the talent. Because as a talent, you always think, I've got more to offer than WWE ever gave me. So I'm going to go elsewhere and show them. And a lot of times they don't. They get elsewhere and they're like, okay, you peaked where you were meant to in WWE, and you've peaked no higher wherever else you went. That can't be said for Nick Nemeth. That can't be said for Mustafa Ali. Similarly to the artist formerly known as Zack Ryder, Matt Cardona. These folks get out there and they're showing the world that they really did have something left to give. And I love seeing that, for those people.
The same here. And I always want, people to succeed wherever they are. People always say, well, this person needs to come here. This person needs to go there. Personally, wherever you're working, I want you to be happy and I want you to do well.
Yeah.
I'd rather you do well and be happy somewhere else than to come to WWE and not be happy.
Do what makes you happy.
One more honorable mention I'll throw out there. Shelton Benjamin just for,
yes.
Yeah.
Since he turned up in AEW, that man has been putting on a wrestling clinic every time he gets in the ring. And like just actually like ring work, and then he's making some of those spot monkey guys in AEW actually work. And it is just,
talk about a guy who's turned back the clock.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man.
But Shelton's turned the clock back 10 years easily.
Yeah, and he's another guy who got released, and so now, and he has turned his innings open, really, and it's been great to see him just work in the ring, you know, again.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that I really, we talk a lot about great wrestler guy, and Shelton is the great wrestler guy, but yes, he's one of the few that I still find compelling without having like a major gimmick that he leans into. Like, it's very rare that somebody can pull off their gimmick being great wrestler guy, and Shelton does it. Like, he's not great on the mic. He's not horrible, but he's not great. The closest thing they ever gave him to like a gimmick was when he was doing that Shelton's Mama thing back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
But just, he's one of those guys where you just watch again. Like I said about Roxanne, Shelton's a guy I love watching work in the ring. I love his fluidity. I love his transitions. I love his chain wrestling. I love just the high spots that he pulls off as seamless as he did, as he does, still does, I should say. Just amazing. And he's one that'll always bother me that WWE didn't find more to do with. You know, and I get, you know, what they look for in WWE, but I look at Shelton and I'm like, you couldn't have done something there, like with him.
Yeah,
yeah, like, I just don't,
sometimes they miss, you know, and that's, yeah.
Yeah.
And even seeing like this, you know, the Hurt Syndicate, it's like, really? You didn't just try to run it back one more time? I don't know.
Now, the Hurt business still had gas in the tank.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It really did. And we've said that before on this show.
Yeah, so this is one of those times where it's like, okay, they're not just, you know, hey, let's play the hits. It's like, no, we had way more to go with this thing.
Yeah. So, but guys, unless you guys have got some more, I don't have anything more for 2024.
Well, I think there's one more thing that we should recover or cover.
What's that?
We saw the retirement of Daniel Bryan.
Did we though?
No, he's not.
I think he's legitimately done as a full-time wrestler. If anything, he'll work an Undertaker schedule around the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's still, I mean, it's notable that he's done with weekly television, like considering this is a guy who's main evented WrestleMania in some of the biggest matches.
Yeah, and I think he's dialed into AEW for the foreseeable future. I read an interview with him, probably about 6 months ago, and he says he's in it for the long haul. He says the only way he'll go back to WWE is that if the business dictates he needs to go. Like, if there's suddenly this dynamic power shift and suddenly AEW is the premier wrestling organization in North America and WWE struggling, he said he would go back, but he said for right now, he's like, and I kind of admire that dedication because he clearly sees value in AEW. And he's hitched his wagon to it, and he's like, you know what? And it's just, and Moxley has said something similar. You know, and while I honestly could give two shits about anything Moxley's currently doing at the moment, I do admire his dedication to that company because come hell or high water, hook or crook, if it kills him, John Moxley has committed himself to making AEW a success. And it looks like Daniel Bryan has hitched his wagon similarly to that company. And well, I admire that.
To be fair, I mean, I would too if the guy writing the checks was like, yeah, if I die, I'm giving this guy the company.
Pretty much.
But, I mean, it, you know, when I looking just, at the two things, obviously he would have some sort of guaranteed job if he just called Triple H and said, hi, I'd want to come back to work.
Yeah.
But when the boss says you're basically the heir apparent, well, yeah, I'd be like, okay, I'm hitching my wagon to this thing till the wheels fall off.
Right. And I think that's, like you said, I respect it. I hope.
But also, hang on, sorry. Hats off to Tony because of all the people in his frickin' company, I can't think of anybody better that I'd just be like, yeah, if to run my wrestling company, if I ever croak, well, here you go.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan Danielson's a hell of a guy to hand it over to.
Right.
And I'll just add that, you know, as far as, you know, dedication, like I've been saying, you know, for it's the best thing for the wrestlers in the long run is for people to go to both companies. And
yeah.
Because
it's good that Daniel Bryan is hitching his wagon to, or Bryan Danielson, yeah, excuse me, has hitching his wagon to AEW. It's good that Jon Moxley is hitching his wagon to AEW.
Yes, for the long term benefit of all the wrestlers, it's good that some people are committing there because, you know, if everybody's knocking on the same door, it's not good because,
yeah,
because, you know, that one door, they will adjust everything accordingly if they know everybody wants to come there. And, you know, the fact that those guys committed to AEW makes things better. It makes things better for Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. You know, Mercedes going to AEW makes things better for Charlotte and Becky and Bianca and, you know, and anybody who stays in WWE. It makes it, it raises the terms with which, you know, it takes to keep you, for them to keep you there.
Yeah, you start looking at your top talent a little bit differently when they have options.
Yeah, and it matters, and it helps everybody. You know, and it helps it when people choose to go there, because I mean it's different when somebody gets released and they don't have any choice, but when people actually choose to go there, it helps everybody.
Yeah.
So Will Ospreay choosing to go there helps. Help people in WWE make more money. It does. And so somebody, you know, we need people to choose. Even if you never watch a minute of AEW television, it's still good. You're still going to need some people to go there who matter.
And yeah.
For the good of the industry.
Okay. Let me throw one question around here.
Real quick. What's insane is at this point with how committed Tony is, and obviously with the deals he's landing with Max and all that stuff, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that a like fairly big name, like I don't want to say Seth Rollins, but like I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Tony lands a very, very big WWE free agent in the next like 3 years. You know, it might be Kevin Steen in the next 3 weeks, but.
Yeah, I never say never anymore, especially since I don't know what kind of – I read something recently that with the new TV deal, AEW, I dispute this, that AEW is valued at about $2 billion as a company. Mm-hmm. Between its talent, between its library, between its assets, it's valued at $2 billion. I don't know how accurate that is. But like, the bigger question here will be Tony's return on investment with the talent. You know, depending on what he's paying – since it's been rumored that Mercedes Moné is making what, $5 to $7 million a year, and that may be lowballing.
Who knows? Yeah.
Is he making that back off of her in terms of ticket sales, in terms of merchandising, in terms of pay per view sales? I can't imagine that he is.
Well, I think. Hang on, I just want to interject real quick with that kind of stuff. At this point, with the TV deals they're landing. Doesn't he just look at it as we kind of talk about it? It's just like a salary cap thing where as long as he's paying very, very well for WWE talent, like quality talent, we'll call it, then it incentivizes other WWE level talent to make the jump. So yes, is he making it back in, you know, 1-to-1 Mercedes Moné, is she making back that $7 million? Maybe not, but in the grand scheme of things, paying those people that level and saying, yes, I am serious about this, and the fact that they're making buku bucks on their TV deals, don't you just kind of just say that's again, it's more like a salary cap. It's like, yeah, all right, as long as my overall roster doesn't cost me this much, I'm fine.
Well, and that was kind of the point that I was going with it. As long as he's willing to overpay people, there will always be somebody in WWE that looks over the fence. You know, it's a lighter work schedule.
Yeah.
It's at least equal pay, if not more than what I'm making. And when you
you know, compare hours work to pay I'm getting, it might actually be more pay. So yeah, obviously, you know, folks are going to look over that side of the fence. And I think it's, you know, WWE cutting its work schedule has been key to keeping people happier. They're not running 300 days a year anymore. I think they're on average running what, 150 to two now?
It's like two something now, I think.
Yeah, it's like right around the two. We'll just say as an average, it's 200 dates a year, which is a hell of a lot better. And that's probably about average for a work year for just a regular. You know, I probably work that many days a year between vacation, between weekends off, you know, whatever, and, you know, holidays. It's probably somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe a little bit more. So that's about right for a job. But, you know, and we've talked about this, you know, if you guys were working for a different podcast and, you know, we were actually getting paid for this and, you know, and you guys called me and said, hey, look, man, we're getting paid X amount of dollars and you only got to put out one episode a month. Well, yeah, I'm going to take that deal.
Another thing,
I'm at least going to consider it.
Yeah.
When I go back to my boss and say, hey, look, my buddies are making X amount of dollars working one day a month. What do you got for me?
Well, yeah, that's the other thing that's baked into the AEW pie of this overpay, which, again, not a bad thing, is you work less days, way less. Yeah. So, hey, that's awesome.
Now, what I would add is that even in WWE, there's maybe four or five people who directly affect the bottom line just as individuals. There are several people who, you know, who help the bottom line because they make the show better by being on it.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's the thing. So I think Tony has, he definitely has a good number of people who make the show better by being on it and make people more likely to want to watch the show. Yeah, I mean, and again, we never know what these real numbers are because they're always, you know, they're using bullshit, but, you know, but while I'm saying this, look, I watch his programming now. Two of the big reasons I watch his programming now, one of them is Will Ospreay, who he definitely paid a lot of money for. And as awful as Mercedes' promo segments have all been, most of her matches have delivered. And so look, I watch her when the bell rings. I turn the volume down when she starts talking.
Yeah, she's a bell-to-bell talent, man, on her own. If she has direction, she's a hell of a lot better, you know, at the other stuff. But
and look, their women's division is better because she's in it. That's for damn sure. And just from,
hang on, I got to stand up for my girl. As much as I've derided her AEW run, when she has good direction or a good script or whatever, she knocks it out of the park. So, yeah, this AEW run has been just disappointing because it's like, you know, some people need that. Like, they need a script. They need bullet points. They need whatever. You know, you got to help them out. That's what you're writing.
Yeah, some people just do not have good creative minds for creating their own content. They're very good at taking content they're given and turning it into something. And Sasha Banks was incredible at everything they ever gave her.
Yeah, man. So, kind of a bummer.
All right, let's do a quick around the room here before we start going home. I want to, 2025 is right around the corner, guys. Starting off a new year. Jason, three things that you want to see from wrestling. Not WWE, not AEW, TNA, none of that. Just three things that will make wrestling better for you in 2025.
Well, it's bad because I was listening. I was lately doing my homework as I was supposed to. Listening to our year-end show from last year, trying to get some ideas of what categories we even talked about. And I am going to make the same want, and I'm sorry you asked me not to do AEW, WWE, whatever. But it's time. Let's please do Evolution. Please.
Okay.
It's time. We got to get somebody do an all-women's show. You guys are... Between AEW, WWE, somebody could do it easily, and they're a shit ton of fun, and it's time. Because all the women's divisions have been, like, knocking it out of the park, and WWE's especially, you know, once we get Becky and Charlotte back, I know that's what we talked about last year. So that that card can be as top heavy and as generally heavy as it can be. But yeah, so an all women's show would be awesome. I'd look, a want and more general want in that same category is just more continued growth in the women's division across the board. Cause there's a lot of, talent that's coming up, which is a lot of fun. And so other than that, I'd like to see, I think we talked about it already, but let's leave ratings talk behind. It's always going to happen, but like with this, and the NBA is getting it now. And it's like, guys, they just signed a $1 billion deal with ESPN. Like, we're good. And, but yeah, it's going to lead to stuff along the margins. Cause you know what it is? None of these shows are getting canceled, but the networks are going to go, okay, what can we do to make these people tune into these shows more? That's what we can talk about. Like, yeah, maybe they'll do, you know, they'll fuck with the All-Star game again, or they'll, you know, change the Royal Rumble, or they'll do, put the Royal Rumble on TV, or something like that. But please, enough of the sky is falling, these shows are going to get canceled. These guys keep getting, these companies keep getting checks that, like, would break the table if they were actually printed. So let's all calm down about that. And then my third want for the new year, I'd like to see more. More wrestling specials on like terrestrial television. Like, and by that I mean, like, WWE being on NBC more. AEW, I don't know what kind of deal they would get, but if they got some sort of Saturday show on, like, an actual, you know, channel. Because I feel like they run those shows completely differently. Because they run them for the general public. And I think, like, the Saturday Night's Main Event, you know, that was, like, kind of whetting my appetite for that kind of stuff. So, yeah. More terrestrial television, old school wrestling shows.
Okay. Rob, what about you?
Things. I want Tony to do the very easy, very simple, very smart thing and put his world title on Bobby Lashley at some point next year. as one.
That's a no-brainer.
It should be. If just don't let those weasels that, you know, talk you out of it, Tony. You know.
Nope.
Those weasels who work in your company, don't let them talk you out of it. More tag team wrestling. Some more, you know. It looks like they might be turning the corner now. But both companies need to, you know, it'd be really nice to see both companies recommit to making tag team wrestling a regular thing. And number one, y'all know what number one is. Y'all know what I want more than anything.
We might be getting that, Bubba. The tease is out there.
Yeah, I think it's all but sealed.
It's imminent.
No, it's not imminent. Royal Rumble, baby.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, and I just, you know.
I mean, that depends on your definition of imminent, but.
Yeah. But, just, you know, yeah, that's number one for me. And
yeah.
Hey, maybe it's imminent because she'll be number one. That'd be fun. And then she wins.
For me, three things. I want AEW to wow me. I want them to rope me in and keep me. I am going to commit to watching once everything goes over to Max. I am going to catch up on current events. I'm going to catch up on current pay-per-views. I want them to keep my interest. You know, not just the talent. I want Tony to tell me that I'd like you as a viewer. You know, I want that for that company. You know, I want to enjoy it. And I hope that I'm able to do that in 2025. Like Rob, I want more emphasis on tag team wrestling. WWE is finally turning the corner. I want those tag team championships to be more than just props. We spent all this time and invested these new belts for each individual show. Let's do something with it. Let's make tag team wrestling a thing again. And number one, and this will probably be my drum to beat until I feel like they've satisfactorily done something with it, more for the women. More and meaningful for the women across the board in wrestling. You know, TNA, WWE, AEW, whoever, you know, I want more and more meaningful women's wrestling in 2025.
So. Yeah, size definitely, like, in terms of, like, character stuff. And
yep.
And I'm on board with Jason for, if not Evolution 2.
Don't just send Kiana James out there with the goddamn Timu bag and be like, make it work, girl.
Right.
Like, you pricks. I'm still mad about that.
Yeah, I'm just, that's the thing that's neat. I mean, just up and down the rosters, on the main roster in particular, we need some time to explore some character exploration for a lot of those women, because they're a lot, you know, I mean, it matters. And it would help. It would make things more compelling. It would help their stuff get over more.
Hey, man, damage control was one of the coolest things going. So let's do more of that, please.
Yeah. So before we get out of here, I want to tease a little bit of 2025. 2025 is going to be a big year for a lot of reasons in pro wrestling. Obviously, the new TV deal's in place. You know, the storylines coming out of 2024 going into 2025. But 2025 is a big, big year, primarily for WWE, but also the wrestling business. It is the year of retirement for John Cena. John Cena's kicking off 2025, going to ride it out until December, and in December he is wrapping it up as a wrestler completely. You know, he's been part-time now for several years, and he says this is his last big run, his last WrestleMania, wrapping things up at the end of 2025. I have a feeling, you know, John Cena's last year is going to be the big topic of discussion amongst a lot of podcasts. We here at the Mindless Wrestling Podcast decided to do something a little different. I want to cover the first year of John Cena's WWE career. When we think of the legend that John Cena became, this Hall of Fame run that he's gone on, first year didn't start out like that.
The first year, prototype?
What's the matter?
You want to do the prototype?
No, the main.
No, not the prototype. I mean, from the Ruthless Aggression promo, which was what I'm counting as night one of John Cena. 12 months from that point, I want to cover John Cena's first official year in main roster WWE. Because I think that would be interesting to see where we started while everybody else is covering where we ended.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to start checking out that first year that he was in WWE. Maybe we'll do a couple of watch-alongs of some key matches. We'll talk some bullet points. And we'll dedicate one episode, not the whole episode, but we'll do like one good segment a month on the first 12 months of John Cena's WWE run. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
All right. So we do 52 episodes a year.
We do.
Could we do a watch-along of all three of our favorite John Cena matches?
We could do that.
Okay, there we go.
We can do that. We can pick apart that first year, start doing your research. We got plenty of time, and we'll do that. And I think that sounds like fun. That's a great idea.
Okay.
So, all right, gentlemen, I'm good. We had a good little holiday party here. This was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
All right, I will go back around the room, thank my co-host, starting with Jason. Sir, fun show tonight.
Yeah, we had a great time. I was glad to have the holiday party vibe. We had a good time.
Yeah, and I'm glad we kind of called it in the ring. Like, we had a loose idea as to what we wanted to do, but at the end of the day, the topics just came out. The discussion flowed. I love it when we do that. From the Rob the Genius Podcast, the host of that show, Rob, sir, thank you.
Yeah, always a pleasure. And happy New Year, everybody.
Yes, absolutely. Happy New Year from the Mindless Wrestling Podcast and all of us here at the Chairshot Radio Network. Remember, you can call it pro wrestling, you can call it sports entertainment, you can call it whatever you want, but call it in the ring. And we're
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus, on edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.